All right, Matt. So I like to order stuff online and have it come in the mail. That's just something fun about doing that. So yesterday I ordered a chicken and an egg. So I'll let you know.
Oh my God.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the graveyard. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Adam.
And my name's Matt.
Now, pull up a tombstone or settle into your casket and get comfortable, because this is Graveyard Tales.
All right, everybody, here we are again. Matt, how you doing tonight, brother?
Man, I'm doing okay.
Good.
I'm doing all right.
Good. Before we get into the normal talking points and before people tune out my normal intro, just going to say this. We are doing our annual Halloween live stream show. So if you're interested, check our social medias and we will have the information posted there on time, and you'll get a link and all this stuff. Go over to Facebook, check out the links and the time and all the information there, and you can join us. It's going to be free. Don't worry about buying a ticket. It's free to join us. And I think you're going to enjoy this one because it's going to be more interactive than it has been the last few years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You can get on there. We're gonna talk about some things and get your take on it as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yep. You can see your name and comment posted on the screen as we talk about it, and we'll answer questions and all that stuff. So go check our Facebook, social media stuff, and find the information and join us Halloween night for our live stream. All right. Now we get on to my normal intro here. Go over to patreon.com/graveyardtales and sign up to become a patron. You can choose from one of three different levels. All the levels get a bonus episode a week. Then our $5 and $10, they get the audio and video of the bonus episode, and they get the ad-free audio and video versions of the main episode. If we don't have an ad that week, ad-free doesn't get posted because it goes up for everybody. So just go over to your podcatcher and get it there. But if you want to join our $10 level, which I think is a fantastic deal, you get all of that stuff and a huge back catalog of episodes that we've been doing for years on there. Plus, you get our second show, Side Quest, which we've been doing for over a year now, which is hard to believe.
I know it.
But on that, we talk about a little bit of everything. It's basically me and Matt trying to make the other one laugh or gross them out or something while having a laugh with you guys. And you get to hear a different side of me and Matt because we don't talk about anything Graveyard Tales related usually. It's totally different subjects. Sometimes we play games. Sometimes I tell stories about crazy survival things. Sometimes Matt gives us some weird topics and facts about other stuff.
Yeah. It's fun. Okay, it's fun. We're having fun doing it. You know, so check it out. You'll be helping the show, and you get us being ridiculous as a bonus. So
Right. If you want to help us out more, check out our sponsors as well. Go use our links and our codes, get you something cool from them. That helps out the show. If you want to keep helping us out, rate and review us on any platform that you get your podcast from. That helps bring us up the charts. And we get suggested to people when they're looking for different shows. And we would love to grow the graveyard even more.
Yeah.
So on that note, Matt, why don't you tell us, what are we talking about tonight, brother?
You know, nothing says haunted like an old mansion.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Adam, we've talked about so many haunted mansions over the years. Disney even has a ride about it.
Right.
Okay. But tonight, we're going to look at one of the most famous mansions in the United States. We're going to dive into the hauntings of the Biltmore Mansion.
Yeah.
Or Biltmore Estate, whatever you want to call it. I mean, I honestly haven't been to the Biltmore since I was like a kid.
Yeah.
So I know you've been.
No, we haven't.
Haven't you?
No.
Okay.
That's the place that we always talk about that we want to go. Ashley is dying to go there. I want to go there. We just haven't been.
I have driven by it and just been like, you know, we ought to go because I don't even hardly remember going as a kid.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, it's an amazing place. You know, it's ridiculously huge. You have no idea until you actually see it. But it's haunted as all get out too.
Yep. Yep.
And we're going to kind of dig into it. And a lot of these places that we talk about, they have this weird, history that really kind of explains why it would be haunted. And I don't know if the Biltmore necessarily has that. We're going to touch on some stories that may contribute, but it wasn't like a Civil War hospital.
Right.
You know,
right.
There wasn't like some big Revolutionary War battle fought there.
Yeah. Wasn't like the McCraven house at all.
Right. Right. It's just, you know, it's a giant freaking house.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, you know, its residents decided, we built this big house. We may stick around for a little while.
Yep. I like it so much. I'm staying.
Yeah.
So before we get into it, like we always say, go check our sources down in the bottom of the show notes. You can find where we found all the information. Everything we talk about, we reference and source in our show notes. So go down there and check it out. If you want to verify what we're saying, or if you just want to keep learning about it, because there's a lot of history that I might not touch on just due to time's sake and my ADHD. But the Biltmore Mansion is the largest privately owned home in the United States. And it's a remarkable example, they say, of Gilded Age architecture and innovation. And I'm going to touch on the innovation here in a second. And it is amazing what they did. Now, George Washington Vanderbilt II. What a name, man.
I know it.
George Washington Vanderbilt II. You can tell just by that dude's name, he's got money.
Yep. Yep.
He decided to build Biltmore after he fell in love with the Asheville area of North Carolina in the 1880s.
So, it is nice up there.
It's a cool area up there. But first, let's look at who George Washington Vanderbilt II was. He was born November 14th, 1862 in Staten Island, New York. Now, he was the youngest son of William Henry Billy Vanderbilt, who inherited the massive railroad and shipping fortune from his father, Cornelius the Commodore Vanderbilt.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Now, there's your connection to what most people think of when they hear Vanderbilt.
Yep. I was going to say, if you don't know, but you've heard of Vanderbilt and the Commodores and Anchor Down and all this other crap that I have to hear from my friends all the time.
Yeah.
And you know who I'm talking about. If you're hearing this, you know I'm talking about you. Stop with the Anchor Down thing. Anyway, that's where the history kind of ties into Vanderbilt in Tennessee. Now, because he was the youngest of eight children, George wasn't pressured into running the family empire or anything. So he had all this freedom and money that allowed him to, you know, pursue his intellectual and artistic interest rather than the corporate duties that his older brothers had to worry about. You know, he was the, hey, look, benefit from the money, but I'm not expecting you to take over. So
yeah,
you don't have to be here every day from morning till night learning the business. But he grew up surrounded by privilege. But even though he had the privilege, he was considered a quieter, more reserved person in relation to his siblings, who were more outgoing and boisterous. George was a serious student. He was fluent in several languages, French and German being some of them. And unlike many of the people in that age that inherited money, those people sought social prominence. Well, George actually preferred what they say, scholarship, travel, and culture.
Mm-hmm.
So he ended up touring Europe extensively, and he fell in love with the French architecture, the art, and landscapes there, which had a big influence on Biltmore that we'll talk about. But he was also passionate about science and nature, especially forestry, agriculture, and animal husbandry, which also plays a big part into the Biltmore, especially in its early years. Now, the Vanderbilts, just a quick touch on them, their family rose from what they consider modest beginnings to become one of the wealthiest and most influential dynasties in U.S. history. Their story includes the explosive industrial growth of the 19th century, including railroads, shipping, and the, quote, extravagance of the Gilded Age. They became known at one point as America's royalty, though the empire of the Vanderbilts eventually fractured and they lost a lot of their fortune. They still were, for a time, America's royalty.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And you know, well, you know, you, when you grow up in a situation to where you literally have to do nothing.
Yeah.
And you are wealthy, you kind of begin to feel that way. I assume. I don't know. I've never even been what you would call well off.
No. And to quote Homer Simpson, we were upper lower middle class.
Yes. It depends on how close we are to payday.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's go back to the Biltmore. He acquired approximately 125,000 acres that were assembled from over 700 parcels of land that included farms and entire communities in some cases. And then he began construction on the Biltmore in 1889 with architect Richard Morris Hunt, who designed the chateau-esque mansion. And it was inspired by French Renaissance chateaus. Like, you know, his time in France really inspired the look of the Biltmore.
Oh, yeah.
And Frederick Law Olmsted, who is a famed landscape architect, started planning the extensive gardens and the surrounding estate. And the whole process of building the Biltmore took 6 years. It involved over 100,000 workers. It required 42,000 bricks per day from an on-site kiln. So that's handmade bricks on-site.
Yeah. Well,
42,000 of them a day.
They didn't have Home Depot back then.
That's a good point. I don't even think if you did Home Depot and Lowe's, I don't think you'd get 42,000 bricks in a day.
Probably not.
Every day for 6 years. Along with all this, they had a dedicated railroad spur just for the materials for the Biltmore.
God, that's amazing.
Isn't it? The fact that you can get one of those. You can get a dedicated railroad spur just for you to build your house.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's incredible. But again, I'm going to say, this whole thing took 6 years, Matt. How long have they been working on I-40 in Nashville?
Forever.
Yep. That's I-35 here. There's no end in sight.
Yeah. Yeah. Still going. I avoid Nashville as much as I can.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't like sitting still.
Right. It's certainly taken more than 6 years.
God.
And it's just a road.
Yeah.
Now, the Biltmore House boasts a 375-foot limestone facade. It has steep, slate-pitched roofs, ornate dormers, turrets, and spires that are inspired by French Renaissance chateaus like the Chateau de Blois. And the main entrance is marked by a four-story tower adorned with balustrades, decorative stonework, and gargoyles. So you can't have a mansion like this and not put a gargoyle on it.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I mean,
and if you have one, you got to have two. One by itself. That's like,
dumb. Yeah.
So that's a weird anomaly.
It is. I mean, I don't have an estate by any means, but I've got some gargoyles sitting up behind me on my shelves. So I mean,
you bring that up, man. I was going to see a patient the other day and drove past a house. It was not where I was going, but I drove past a house that had, it was a modest house. I mean, it was pretty decent size, I guess. You know, it wasn't a mansion by no means, but they had this big rock and brick gate.
That's cool.
And it had gigantic gargoyles on it. I mean, gigantic. Like, I was kind of shocked, or I would have stopped and took a picture of it.
Yeah.
But I was like, those are awful big.
Next time you go by there and get a picture.
I'm telling you, they were at least about 4 feet tall each.
Wow.
That'd be cool. And we're in a regular residential neighborhood.
Yeah, right. The neighbors are probably like, what is this fool doing?
What kind of witchcraft are you practicing in there?
Yeah, right. Especially in Tennessee and you're putting up gargoyles in a residence.
Right.
Yeah, if I ever get my dream of having land out in the country, you better believe I'm putting some gargoyle statues out at the road just to... Because here in Texas, that'll keep people from coming in.
Oh, yeah.
They'll see that and go, oh, they do some weird stuff. I ain't going in there, and turn right around. That works better than a locked gate. Just put up some weird stuff that frightens your neighbors and they won't come in at all.
The big concrete Sasquatch in your yard, you know, in the pose, you know, fully three-dimensional statue of Bigfoot in your yard.
Yep. Right next to my flagpole. I'll have it holding my flagpole so it looks like it's holding up my flagpole. Now, the house itself is asymmetrically balanced, they say. It's got two wings, a loggia to the left opening to mountain views, and then a windowed arcade to the right housing a Victorian winter garden. So, let's look at some of the key features of the house. It has 250 rooms. Now, remember, this was a private house to start out with. This was not built as a hotel.
Yeah, exactly. For what? Like,
yeah.
Five people?
Yeah. It was built as a, like, getaway retreat for his family and then friends that he wanted to have over.
Yeah. And they were able to get away from one another in the house.
Yeah. Because of the 250 rooms, they had 35 bedrooms, 43 bathrooms, and 65 fireplaces. Some of them rooms had multiple fireplaces, I think.
That must have. And imagine the amount of firewood you would need.
Oh, Lord. Yeah. Yep. Now, it has huge interior spaces. It has a tile-vaulted entrance hall. It has a glass-roofed winter garden, a double-height library, which I would love to have. If I could have a huge library in my house with the wheelie ladders, that would be fantastic. I just want to get on a ladder and wheel across books. I don't know why. Now, it also had a massive banquet hall that had oversized fireplaces in the banquet hall, oak paneled billiard room, a music room, and a tapestry gallery. Now, some of the modern amenities for the era. All right, so this episode is sponsored by Fume Zero, the brand new grab-and-go flavored air device from Fume. Now, we all have a bad habit, and my bad habit just happened to be one that I wanted to do all the time, no matter where I was.
Yeah, and like habits are.
Yeah, I guess, like habits are. So I had a problem on stopping this habit until we found Fume. And Fume Zero is great because it's got a chewable tip for that oral fixation, and all you're doing is breathing through the fume, so you can do it anywhere. There's no vapor, there's no smoke, and it really helped with my bad habit because I had something to do with my hands, it was fidgety, and I could quell that oral fixation by, you know, bringing something to my lips and also sitting there kind of gnawing on the tip a little bit.
Yeah, and the original Fume is fantastic, but here is why the Fume Zero is different. It's affordable at just $24.99 for a sleek, pre-filled device. You have no commitment, no refills, and no batteries.
Great.
It's completely clean. There's zero nicotine, zero vapor. It's just natural plant-based flavored air. It's the first truly easy way to try the good habit with 6 bold flavors and up to 10 days of use. Zero makes it simple to start. So take zero chances with Fume Zero today, available for just $24.99. Just head to tryfume.com. That's TRYFUM.com to start with zero.
That's right. You can take zero chances with Fume Zero today. You can get it for just $24.99 if you go to tryfume.com, TRYFUM.com, to start with zero. Now, here's where we get kind of cool, and I'll touch on it again here in a second, but just listen to this. It had an indoor heated swimming pool for, let's say, just 1900, because it was 1889. So let's say 1900. You had a heated swimming pool indoors.
Yeah.
In a private residence. It had a bowling alley, a gymnasium. It had walk-in refrigerators and 3 kitchens.
Hey, here's an interesting factoid about that swimming pool.
Mm-hmm.
It was heated, but it had no filtration.
Mm.
So they had to routinely drain it and fill it with fresh water.
Yeah, because...
And when I saw that...
Boiling of people in there. Oh, you're cooking people. And urine and,
I mean, from a person who has fought with a swimming pool that does have filtration, I can't imagine the experience of getting in this pool and knowing it's time to change the water.
Yeah, right. Yeah, get in it and you can taste it.
Ugh.
It just tastes
and
like
smell it.
Armpit and urine.
You can smell it, all the chlorine coming out of the water. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess there probably was no chlorine
probably
in the water
then. Probably no chlorine
then.
Either, no.
So stuff grew in it even faster.
Yep. And you know people still peed in the pool, even back then.
Oh, yeah. From the diving board.
You're swimming in Steve's pee-pee the whole time until they drain it. Yeah. God, I thank God for modern amenities like pool filtration. Yeah.
Listen, and this was not like a wading pool or like a little, you know, you go to a hotel and it's like you have your own private pool and it's like a big bathtub. Okay. Mm-hmm. The Biltmore pool was 23,000 square feet and it held 600,000 gallons of water.
Yeah, see, that's excessive.
That's insane.
That's ridiculous. And it was heated. What did it take to heat that?
Yeah, That's like building your own private beach in your house. Mm-hmm.
Might as well have thrown sand next to it.
Yeah.
Now, the Biltmore House was finished in 1895, but it had groundbreaking amenities for the era. It had electricity, central heating, fire alarms, electrical call box systems for servants, two elevators, elaborate plumbing serving the 34 bedrooms, and one of the earliest uses of Edison's light bulbs. The mansion featured over 4 acres of floor space. So if you're like me, you went, wait a minute, there's fire alarms from 1895?
Yeah, I kind of was like that too.
Okay, but yes, there are. Let me tell you about them because I had to look this up. It was fascinating to me. And I'm like, holy crap, they had fire alarms in 1895.
Was it like the Flintstones? They yanked down on a bird's tail and it started going, bah, bah, no, fire.
No, it was just, it was one of their servants that just hung out on the roof.
Yeah.
He was taped to the roof. And when he
if
started
you smell
getting,
smoke, start...
And when he started getting warm, he would go, fire. No. A fire alarm from 1895. It's an automatic electric fire alarm system. It was actually invented in 1890. So only 5 years before that, by a guy named Francis Robbins Upton. He was an associate of Thomas Edison. Now, this information said, while advanced for their time, these systems were too expensive and complex for widespread residential use in 1895. So the system used heat detection technology with heat-sensitive devices placed in rooms. When the temperature rose above a preset level, it would complete an electrical circuit, which we kind of still use that today. Same theory. Now, once the circuit was closed from the heat, the alarm would sound, but the heat-based method meant that the alarm would often not trigger until the fire was already fully underway.
Yeah.
So it didn't help you put it out, but it might help you get out. So
And at the time, I mean, you know, it's going to alert you. It's not, there's not a fire department that's
right,
going to, unless
it can call.
Unless you built your own fire department next door to your house, yep. You know, there may not have been a way for even a volunteer fire brigade to get to someone's house fast enough to save the house. But
especially
you're right.
Biltmore being out where it was.
If it alerted you, you know, once your house was on fire, but before it was completely engulfed, it would save your life.
Yep. Yep. It would. Now this says that for households with this system, the alarm would sound locally. Other available technology at the time would have allowed the alarm to transmit a signal to a central monitoring station, which would then notify the fire department. So they were working on this capability, like Matt was saying, of notifying the fire department. But even if you had this system, you weren't guaranteed to notify anybody but you.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And then if the Biltmore, I didn't find if the Biltmore had the way to go to a central monitoring station or not. I couldn't find that. But even if they did, they were sitting over 100,000 acres. So think about a horse and buggy fire department trying to get to you.
Yeah.
Over 100,000 acres. By the time they get there, it would have done no good.
Mm-hmm.
The Biltmore would be gone.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised George Washington Vanderbilt II didn't build his own fire department with everything else he built. I don't know why he did.
With 65 fireplaces, you would have thought.
Yeah,
this would
right?
be a good place for a fire department.
Yep. I'm going to spend a little bit less on my house and I'm going to build a fire department and hire some firemen.
What's amazing to me though, is they had the idea and put it together in 1890.
Right.
I mean, 'cause fire alarms really just, if you think about it, Sounds like a modern invention.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That's why I was fascinated to know that they had one.
Yeah. That is really cool.
It sounds like something that would have happened in the mid-1900s.
Absolutely.
Not 1890. Now, some of the highlights of the construction of this house was the facade and towers were modeled after European chateaus, like I said, with vertical emphasis, pinnacles, and intricate stone details. So it included a temporary railroad, like I said, to deliver the materials, and it had a steel infrastructure for support and high-tech amenities, like I was talking about, the electrical systems, heated pools, which was all ahead of its time, basically. Now, Rafael Gustavino, a Spanish engineer, personally oversaw the installation of self-supporting ceramic tile vaults and arches throughout the house. Now, Vanderbilt opened the home to family and friends for leisure and country pursuits. Mm-hmm. Quote, country pursuit. I like that. It's here. We're rich and from the city. Let's come out here and pursue country stuff. And then there's people like me that are going, I live country stuff. What? Why are you coming out here to pursue it? This ain't country. Anyway, they emphasized hospitality and relaxation in this lavish setting. Now, he married Edith Stuyvesant Dresser in 1898. Their daughter, Cornelia Vanderbilt, was born at Biltmore in 1900.
Named after her grandfather.
Mm-hmm. The Commodore Van... I don't know.
Cornelius Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
Commodore.
I had to bring in Commodore.
You're just asking for it.
I am. I know. I open my mouth and then for 2 weeks now, I'm going to get text from this one particular friend of mine about that.
Well, you know, and I'm not a loony, but I look, you know, not to go too far off track, but Vanderbilt is looking pretty good this year.
Yeah.
I mean, they're 2-0.
Which means I got to hear more from him.
I told Amanda Saturday evening, we're watching the Vanderbilt Virginia Tech game. I said, you know, it's kind of fun seeing Vanderbilt be pretty good, you know?
Right. Yep. Now, the estate was designed to be self-sustaining with scientific approaches to forestry, agriculture, and animal husbandry that they say was modeled after European estates, with an accompanying village that included shops, rentals, a post office, a school, and a church. Now, after George Vanderbilt's untimely death in 1914, some reports say that this was due to complications related to an appendectomy.
That's what I read too.
Edith Vanderbilt sold 87,000 acres to the federal government, which formed the nucleus of the Pisgah National Forest. Now, didn't we just talk about the Pisgah National Forest in a Patreon?
We did.
All right. I was going to say, I feel like I've said that before because it sounds dirty, even though it's not. The estate was open to the public in 1930 during the Great Depression to help support tourism in the area and finances. And during World War II, priceless works from the National Gallery of Art were actually stored in Biltmore House for safekeeping. Today, the estate covers 8,000 acres, and it's operated by Biltmore Company. Its tourism is thriving. A winery developed from the old dairy barn is there. It boasts two hotels and Antler Hill Village, and then that kind of the Antler Hill Village and stuff that helped fulfill Vanderbilt's original vision for this self-sustaining estate, but it remains a National Historic Landmark. And they say, quote, a testament to the innovation, artistry, and hospitality of the Vanderbilts. So it's a very cool house. Very large house.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a very interesting history, not like Matt was saying with this was a Civil War Hospital. Lots of people died here. No, it's an interesting history because of the innovations that were built into this house. And to me, the fact that during World War II, it housed priceless works of art from the National Gallery of Art.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. And like I said, my sister lives up that way, and I know she's been several times. And I've always heard, you know, it's gorgeous at Christmas, and I've watched videos of them putting up the ginormous Christmas tree that goes in there, that kind of stuff. You know, really, really neat place. And a great trip, you know, an excellent family trip from all I've been told. But if you are like Adam and myself and maybe have a little bit of interest in the spooky stuff, this could also be a very interesting trip for you because so many visitors and staff at the Biltmore Estate have reported a paranormal experience. And it varies widely as to what people will notice. But staff and guests have reported things such as cold spots or a sense of being watched or followed. Yeah, pretty common. How about being pushed? Now,
I don't like that.
You know, getting shoved by a ghost is not top of my list.
Nope.
Maybe once. So I can tell the story. But
yeah,
don't do it again. But staff has heard the sounds of a party in the Great Hall, even when no one's there. And they report the distinct sounds of clinking glasses, orchestral music, and animated conversations coming from vacant rooms.
Well, and that's cool.
And, you know, the Vanderbilts, you know, even though George was more of a private, you know, reserved individual, Edith enjoyed the social aspect of having a home like this. Mm-hmm. And they enjoyed throwing these parties, or at least Edith did.
Yeah.
And so, you know, having guests, you know, coming in, traveling in to have these big lavish parties, you know, having parties for the local community, whatever, they were routinely entertaining, and you can still hear the echoes of that even today.
Mm-hmm.
And it says that they held the article I read used the term grand soirees. And you know, this was during the golden era of the Biltmore. You know, what's the line from Dumb and Dumber where the beer flows like wine, you know?
So, oh yeah.
It was like, what, you know, but yeah, I mean, you know, they were wiping their rear ends with, you know, dollar bills. I mean, it wasn't they had it and they enjoyed it. Now the grand staircase and the basement are two particular spots where most of the haunted occurrences are reported. Now witnesses have heard footsteps and seen shadowy figures going up and down the stairs for years. Now, the staircases in a lot of these haunted hotels, a lot of these haunted mansions, these estates, palatial homes, the staircase is a focal point, but it's also a liminal space. And we've talked about that those transitional areas tend to be where you're most likely to catch, you know, an apparition or something, you know, not quite right. I mean, I couldn't even count, but how many photos or supposed photos of ghosts have we seen that are coming down a staircase?
Right.
I mean,
and so many of those are a woman in a blank dress.
Right, right. I will say this. The Biltmore does not have a woman in white.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good.
Surprisingly. She's in a different color, but she's not in white.
Yeah. Which, I mean, that's a step.
That's right. We're moving in the right direction here. But strange smells often accompany the footsteps on the staircase, especially
Is it from the pool? The strange smells coming from the pool?
Strange smells from the pool, yeah.
This guy just got out of the pool. Jeez.
Yeah. Man. It's like a giant toilet.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Well,
Port-a-John.
But no, one of the smells that people report is cigar smoke.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Which, at the time that the Vanderbilts were living there, that probably was not that uncommon. But now, the Biltmore is strictly no smoking. Mm-hmm. Okay? It's prohibited. So, you shouldn't smell cigar smoke.
Yeah, right.
Anywhere in that home.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and, you know, look, you and I both used to be smokers. I can pick up the smell of cigar or cigarette smoke. I mean, like
quick.
That.
Yeah.
And it's amazing how you can, I mean, there could be somebody at a red light in a car smoking.
Mm-hmm.
I could
mm-hmm.
have my windows up and I got somebody smoking.
Yep.
So you really pick up on that, and it's a distinct acrid smell. So to be walking through, you know, this giant estate and catch a whiff of that at a place where you know they're not going to allow someone to be smoking, that is a little weird.
Yeah.
That cigar smoke smell, it follows a lot of haunted places. But
yeah, you wonder if, see, what I've wondered about that is it happens in so many haunted places. Is it from the spirit who smokes cigars, or is that cigar smell just emitted by apparitions?
I've not ever considered that, but it's possible.
The act of being an apparition in an area creates a smell that we associate with cigar smoke, but it's just the smell that their presence emits when it interacts with the atmosphere.
That maybe this is the odor of ectoplasm or whatever you want to call it. Yeah. Well, hey,
exactly.
that's not a bad theory. I've not considered it, but it makes sense because we do see that in so many of these hauntings. Now let's talk about the basement. Now there have been reports of spectral servants cooking and doing chores in the kitchen. The servants' quarters are beneath the main floor, and people, visitors, guests, staff have all reported seeing misty figures that go between rooms and through the kitchen area. It like servants going through their regular routine.
Okay.
But similar apparitions are also found in the indoor pool area. And it just suggests that you're seeing the replay of these servants, these staff members going through their daily routine. You know, just, you know, it was something they did. They did the same thing every day. They had tasks that they had to do, and they went through them, and it left a mark, you know, that people can see nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's pretty interesting. I mean, I don't know that this is like a stone tape kind of thing, because with that, you see energy. Something negative happened.
Yeah.
You know, something.
Yep, true.
There was an event. There was some type of outpouring of emotion that helped push the energy, you know, into the inert object.
Yeah.
And now that energy is what allows a residual haunting to occur. We don't really see that here.
True.
You know, we're going to talk about some odd, tragic things, but there's nothing that you would expect to hold on to enough energy for spirits of the servants to just do their menial tasks.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, it's not a servant that, you know, died some tragic death in the house and they're hunting for their left hand or something.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's not that. So yep. It is kind of unique to the Biltmore for that to happen.
The only thing I can think is, like we've mentioned before, spirits tend to go back to a place that they felt comfortable, mm-hmm. that they loved, mm-hmm. that they had a good time at. So even though they were working, maybe they loved the Biltmore. They just loved that house.
It's very possible. And there, out of all the research I did, there was no indication that there was anyone that was unhappy.
Yeah.
Working yep. for the Vanderbilts. That there was, they weren't mistreated. You know, they weren't, you know, paid like a beggar's wage or anything mm-hmm. like that. That, you know,
he didn't beat them.
They may have wished that they were not a servant for these, you know, billionaires.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, at the time, you know, it was a job and, you know, they were treated fair enough. So
yep.
again, nothing that I found showed anything that would have left a lasting impression,
mm-hmm.
but it's there nonetheless. Now the swimming pool that's also in the basement, is empty. I might add, they don't fill it up with water. I'm sure for good reason.
Yep. Yep.
But
urine pit.
Well, I mean, you're not going to open up a swimming pool that has no filtration.
That's
you know?
True.
I mean, especially, what are they going to, especially when it holds 600,000 gallons.
Yeah. And with the amount of guests that they get there nowadays, that would right. be awful.
Right. But the people that have visited there say that they routinely hear the sounds of water splashing in the pool area, even though
that's
it's empty.
Interesting. You think you can go skating in that pool, like skateboarding in the pool?
Maybe. I've not actually, I've looked at a picture of it. It doesn't look like what you think of as a swimming pool. It looks like the swimming pool in an abandoned high school. That's what it looks yeah. like, you know, where it's like the tile, you know, it looks like you can see like the marks all the way up, you know, it's
oh,
just,
yeah.
you know, it's,
yeah,
it's technically a swimming pool, but it's not a modern looking swimming pool.
It's also technically just a hole in the ground.
Yeah, true enough. But the most unsettling thing about the experiences people have around the pool is the sound of laughter coming from the pool's drain.
What?
Yeah.
No thanks.
I'm like,
how'd you get down
from
there?
From the drain. It? There's a ghost stuck in the drain.
And that's it.
It
man.
Thinks it's hilarious.
Yeah.
But there is an unfounded rumor. There is a ghost story associated with this, but there is no evidence that this really happened. But the story is that a child drowned in the pool, and it was during one of the Vanderbilt's big parties.
Oh,
so
geez.
A child kind of wandering around, fell in the pool and drowned. Very tragic thing, no doubt, but this would have been the lasting impression. This may be one of the things that the story comes after the experience, where it's like,
yeah.
why in the devil would there be laughing coming from the pool's drain? Why would mm-hmm. we hear splashing water in
we
an
gotta
empty
explain
pool?
It.
And, you know, there's, well, you know, I heard, well, there's, you know, people talk. And
true,
you
yeah.
come up with a story that says some people think there was a child that drowned in the pool during one of the parties, and that would explain why you hear that. We don't know. It's an interesting story, and it would make you feel kind of like leery about going around mm-hmm. the empty pool. And people do report having this odd sense of anxiety or dread when they are in the pool area. I think it's because
could also be. It's an empty pool.
That's
which
it.
Which is weird.
Yes. But if you've ever been around an empty swimming pool, especially an indoor empty pool, it is creepy AF. I'm telling you. I don't know why.
As frogs.
It just is.
Mm-hmm.
It's what?
You said AF. I said as frogs.
As frogs. It's like, did he just say frogs? What?
Mm-hmm. I did.
I guess I got to keep up. But there has also been a woman in black that has been seen near the pool.
There she is.
Which could be the cause of so much distress for visitors in that area. Yeah, a creepy ghost wearing a black dress, sure.
Yep, with laughter coming from the drain.
Now, this one I thought was fun, and it's perfect for this time of year. In the basement of the Biltmore is the quote-unquote Halloween room.
Mm.
Okay? It features a series of beautiful, creepy murals. And you can look at, there's pictures of the murals. They are not like, they are not macabre, really. They are strange, but they are artwork that was taken from a Russian cabaret that was very popular at the time. And like, if you've ever watched, Moulin Rouge or hell, even Cabaret, the musical, you know that dress and the imagery, a lot of red, you know,
yeah,
heavy black eyeliner, you know, the really odd, you know, it's got a funny feel to it. The big face with the tongue and the smile and everything, all that, it's all there in these murals because it's taken from a Russian cabaret show. They believe, they're not 100% sure, but they believe that this was done in preparation of like a bohemian themed New Year's Eve celebration.
Mm, okay.
And so it just was left over, you know, from that. The brightly colored murals show images of soldiers, witches, black cats, and bats. And they directly come from the program for that show.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, in the Halloween room, some guests have reported seeing a woman in a flapper dress. Okay. Mm. Now, the flapper dress from like the 1920s, you know, the little slinky, thin, skinny dress with the little frills at the bottom. You know, it's kind of straight.
And then big feather on top of the head.
Yeah. Also, you know, very common to that cabaret type theme.
Yep.
I saw one video that said she was very drunk. I don't know how they figured that.
She was slurring her words.
But perhaps she is reliving one of those Halloween parties that took place over a century ago. Who knows? Yep. But it is kind of odd. Screams have also been heard coming from the Halloween room, as well as multiple footsteps that seem to wander around the room, like going from wall to wall, much like a party.
Yeah.
And, you know,
I figured out how they could tell she was drunk.
How's that?
Because they walked in and her spirit's there and she's like, boo, hey, I love you. Just kidding. Boo. Nah, I love you.
She just hanging on you, you know. Has anyone seen my fiance?
Yeah, we're best friends. It's a bed and boo.
Yeah, that would do it. You know,
or this ghost is
strong.
Drunk.
Smell of whiskey when you walk into the Halloween room.
Yep.
But
it smells like absinthe in here. What is going on?
Yeah, if you had absinthe and you looked at the murals on this wall, you'd probably have a bad trip.
Yeah.
Now, as I said, there weren't any huge negative things that happened at the Biltmore, but there were a couple of tragedies, so to speak. And one of those, and this one is documented, and it's very well documented. It occurred at the Biltmore's Shiloh Gate in 1922. So security guard Walter Brooks encountered five young men who approached the gate, it says, with threatening intentions.
No.
Don't know what that could mean, but Brooks felt like these guys were up to no good.
Yeah.
Now, the confrontation escalated when one of the men, seeking revenge for his dog's death on the property, advanced towards Mr. Brooks. In response, Brooks fired his weapon and killed two of the young men and wounded another.
Jeez.
Now, following a three-hour deliberation, the court found Brooks guilty of second-degree murder, which resulted in a 40-year sentence of hard labor.
Man.
So I guess they didn't really have a stand your ground law or anything else.
Apparently not.
You know,
nope.
I kind of get the idea that there were some young men who had probably tipped back a few and decided they were going to go and cause a ruckus.
They killed
during
my dog.
Yeah.
We got to get them back.
About their dog, and things got out of hand, and, you know, that's what happened. But, but you know, he didn't. Even with all the Vanderbilt's money, you know, he was still found guilty and had a 40-year sentence of hard labor.
Man.
I'm guessing this dude probably wasn't that young to begin with.
No. Know? No, I'd assume not.
Breaking rocks, you know. It's like those old comics, you know, the guys in prison, they're just smashing rocks. Why are you doing that?
Big rocks into smaller
rocks. That's right. Making chess pieces, trying to tunnel their way out.
I would almost guarantee he didn't serve out his whole 40 years.
No.
I can't imagine.
But it does show some progressiveness because, you know, 50 years earlier, they'd have just hung him right there. You know?
Yeah, right.
Guilty. And then they're...
At least they had a trial.
They're putting up a gallows. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the local lore tells of another dark chapter around the old forestry compound, which was built in 1898. Now, it had served as the Biltmore Forestry School until 1913, with one building gaining notoriety as a meeting place for illicit activities. Translation, it was a brothel, essentially.
Oh. Alrighty.
But not like an operating brothel. It was like basically an empty building where you could hook up with a lady of the evening.
Take somebody there.
Reports say that a lady of the evening was murdered there by a client. But official reports, it's hard to find anything that verifies this.
Yeah. Now, from that far back.
Yeah.
I think you'd be hard-pressed to, even if it were 100% true.
Yeah.
You would be hard-pressed to find anything about a lady of the evening from that time getting killed.
Right.
And, you know, I think the only reason we know about, like, Jack the Ripper is because there was so many of them.
Right,
if it
exactly.
had just been one, we wouldn't have the newspaper articles or anything about it.
No, you're exactly right, you know. But visitors to the area describe these inexplicable lights that operate independently in the vacant windows. They also report strange temperature drops despite it being warm outside. And some visitors have actually reported seeing the apparition of a woman inside the building through the windows.
Oh, wow.
Now, one visitor alleged that they saw a noose hanging from a rafter in the building, and another said they saw a downstairs toilet full of blood.
Oh, jeez.
But it's important to note that this building is closed to the public, and entering this building would be considered trespassing. Mm-hmm. So they're not giving tours of this place.
Yeah.
So You've always got to take it with a grain of salt when somebody says they saw a noose inside the building or a toilet full of blood. But you're like, you really weren't supposed to be in there. Did you really go in there? You know,
how did you get in there?
Yeah,
if you saw it?
Exactly. But it's interesting, and it's right there, you know, essentially as a part of the estate. It's not part of the main house, but it's on the property. Now, two of the spirits that have been identified at the Biltmore are, of course, its original owners, George and Edith Vanderbilt.
Mm-hmm.
Now, George loved the estate's massive two-story library and would often go in there to read. And he loved to go in there to read when there were storms going on, which I'll be honest, when I read that, I thought, so would I.
Yeah.
That would be amazing. You know, be sitting in a big library and a storm going on outside.
Hear the rain coming down and
reading a book about storms.
You know how fast I'd be asleep, though? That would be the problem.
True enough. Yeah. I would.
Twas the best of times. Twas the.
Exactly.
Just
but
out.
We listen to storms, you know, to go to sleep. You know, our white noise of choice is storms.
Yeah.
You know. I've never seen my daughter. She goes, is it going to storm tonight? Oh, I'm going to sleep so good. I was like, I was your age, I was kind of scared of storms. You know what the heck?
Yeah. It would be great if we could do that here, and Ashley can't. But me, because this is Texas, I'm waiting to hear that tornado alarm.
Oh, yeah.
The tornado siren happen. So I get a little anxious when the storm gets too bad.
Look, there are times a year here that, you know, you're kind of on high alert when they tell you that a storm's coming through. And, you know, we've had a few close. So, but the general run-of-the-mill thunderstorm.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. If it's just raining, I'm all good.
Yep. Now, some staff says that they have seen George Vanderbilt's apparition in the library whenever there's a storm coming. So that's pretty neat.
Yeah.
Others have heard the name George whispered in an empty room as if Edith is calling out to him. But some have reported a woman's voice calling out his name loudly as if the whispers weren't enough to pull George away from his beloved library.
Huh.
Because it's interesting, a lot of the articles will mention this, that during these big galas, these big parties that they would throw, he would casually slip out and go to the library and just be hanging out reading in the library while this big party's going on in his house.
My kind of guy.
That's right. Exactly.
A man after my own heart.
But many people have reported seeing George's spirit sitting in a chair reading by the fireplace. If I have to be a ghost, that's what I want to do.
No joke.
Now, in addition to the Vanderbilts, the ghost of a woman in pink has been seen wandering the halls. Now, this entity is allegedly the mistress of George Vanderbilt, who died in 1898 at a hospital not far from the estate. This is really the first, like, you know, I don't know, maybe not necessarily, I guess it would be a negative, but this is really the first time we've heard of anything, you know,
not
kinda,
upstanding.
Yeah. Kind of dirty, you know,
and
scandally.
A lot of times when we do places like this, that's some of the first stuff that comes up. You know, how many places have we done where I've talked about, oh, this guy in the history, oh, this guy had 17 mistresses and da-da-da-da-da.
All these illegitimate children.
Yeah,
and,
it didn't
you know,
come up.
No, it doesn't. And, but again, I'm not promoting this, but I'm saying we're talking about turn-of-the-century wealthy people.
Yeah.
You know, that considered...
Probably happened.
Were considered and probably considered themselves royalty. So the man of the house having a side piece, probably not that unusual.
Yeah, probably.
Okay.
You know.
And the interesting thing is that if this spirit is of the woman that they believe it is, she did not die in the house. But she died in a hospital, which is not far, but not at the house. So
she came back to rub it in the wife's face.
Either that, or it's like you said, some place that they really, really loved. Mm-hmm. And that's where their spirit went back to. You know, yep. That is from what I could tell, it wasn't a tragic death. I think she fell ill and died, but it wasn't like she wasn't murdered.
Did Edith have anything to do with
it? I don't know, but you gotta, you know. Hey, what does this handkerchief smell like to you? Chloroform?
Yeah, right. Right. What's your wine taste like tonight?
Hemlock.
It's not bitter. Yeah. It's not bitter, is it?
Now, visitors have reported seeing the ghost of a boy playing in the gardens, and some have claimed to hear his laughter. Now, it is believed that the boy may have been a victim of a tragic accident on the estate, but no one knows for sure. So I thought, could this be the spirit of the young boy who supposedly drowned in the Vanderbilt's pool? Makes sense to me.
Yep.
Especially with the laughter being the commonality there.
True.
But probably one of the strangest apparitions at Biltmore, and one of the strangest I've ever heard of, is the ghost of an orange cat with no head.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, it has been. It has been also spotted in the gardens, and no one knows who owned the cat or why it's always headless. But it's pretty disturbing if you come across the headless orange cat.
Right. And at this point, who owned it? It doesn't matter.
Right. It could be a stray. I mean. Yeah.
I just want to know why there's a headless cat walking around.
Yeah. And animal ghosts are always kind of weird to me anyway.
Yeah.
It's like, what unfinished business did you have?
Yeah.
You know.
Now,
never caught pets, that mouse. Yeah. You know?
Right. Pets, I can get them coming back to stay with their owner.
Mm-hmm.
I've had some interesting experiences along that line. But cats, I don't see that, because cats don't give a damn if you're there or not. As long as their food is full,
yeah,
they're like, this is just a two-legged food dispenser. I don't care. You know, so having a cat come back is odd.
Mm-hmm.
If it was a stray and just like a barn cat, why would it come? Is it looking for its head?
Maybe.
Is that all I can think of?
I would be. You know,
yeah,
if I was
sure.
A headless cat, I'd be wondering where my head was.
I can't go into the afterlife missing my head.
Yeah.
Do you know how many people will laugh at me?
That's right.
I've got to find my head.
Now, what I would like to hear is that some people have seen the head separate, like Cheshire Cat style. You know,
that would be cool.
You know, this apparition of this orange cat head.
Sitting up in a tree.
Yeah. You know, blue pill, red pill.
Creepy.
Come on. You know, what, eat me, drink me. Isn't that the Alice in Wonderland thing?
Yep. Yep.
But that's a pretty good amount of paranormal activity, even for a large estate.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing all that terrifying.
No. Nope.
Just some stuff that's quite unusual. Maybe
a couple unsettling things.
Yeah, and maybe atypical for what we would usually see in a haunted home, converted now to a hotel or whatever. But still pretty cool nonetheless. And like I said, if you can go and stay at the Biltmore, tour it. It's beautiful. They have tons of events all year long. And like I said, if you are into I would love to stay somewhere haunted.
Yep.
This is a good option. It's like Adam, you know, Ashley booked the Airbnb for her and it was haunted for Adam and Michael. So,
exactly.
You know, it's a win-win, you know,
everybody gets something out of it.
That's exactly right. But I'm sure we have a lot of listeners who have been to the Biltmore. Like I said, my sister's been several times.
Mm-hmm. We're going to go eventually.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. To me, it always kind of seemed like something that Amanda and I would do when the kids were grown. and you know, everybody's out, you know,
kidless.
We're like, let's go to Asheville for the weekend and stay at the Biltmore. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really does. But I'll be honest, I'm getting to the age where I think, yeah, I would do that, especially if the kids weren't going to come. Yeah, right. Let's go.
Kid-free weekend.
But let us know. Maybe you have an unusual story from your visit to the Biltmore. And the best place to tell us about that is in our Facebook group. It's called The Graveyard. Check it out. We've got thousands of members in there. It's extremely active with people telling stories, asking for help with weird things going on in their house, posting jokes and all that other stuff. It's just a really great environment, and it's a good place to interact with the show. Don't forget to go to our website, which is graveyardpodcast.com. There you can find links to purchase Graveyard Tales merchandise. You can listen to the show, and you can become a patron. And as Adam mentioned at the top of the show, we have a huge back catalog of bonus episodes, and our $10 members get access to SideQuest, which is it's no longer new. It's been around for a year, but it's a lot of fun if you enjoy, you know, the random tangential, you know, activity that Adam and I indulge ourselves in when we, well, this makes me think of Scooby-Doo. If you like that kind of stuff, then you can get an entire show's worth of it with SideQuest.
Yeah, right.
So be sure and go check that out. And you're helping the show, as well. So until next time, we'll save you a seat in the graveyard.
See you soon.